In this episode, I speak with my sister, Cindy, who alongside our eldest sister, Stephanie, was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer in 2017. Thanks to a genetic test, doctors were able to catch the cancer early, but both sisters underwent surgery to remove their breasts and ovaries and had both went through chemotherapy treatments. Cindy, by coincidence, was also the same age that our mother had been when she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, and we were just children. We chat about Cindy's views on most people living what she calls a deferred life of maybes one day and sometime, and on what she remembers from our mother's early cancer diagnosis, and finally, on the value of self-care. Here is her story.
Hello, Cindy.
Hello, Cassie.
So
I feel like you need to chat about other things before going right into the questions, because otherwise it's like really awkward.
No, I'm just going to read it out to you.
And you know, actually you sent me the questions and I actually didn't.
That's good. No, we're going to improvise. We're going to improvise. And because it is such a tricky, because what we're going to talk about is so heavy, what I want to start out by understanding is the type of person that you are to start out with. And so I want to bring it back to, how would you describe your childhood? How were you as a child?
That was the thing where it's like, that's a really difficult question. Because almost goes into the heavy right away. So I would say unremarkable, like ordinary. I think that's not a terrible thing to say. I think people always think they're extraordinary beginnings, but sometimes beginnings are just the beginning and they start off like everyone else. And I think our parents provided a good life for us. They were hardworking. You know, they weren't wealthy by any means, but some of my favorite memories are that our parents never made us feel like we weren't, right? Sometimes we upset that we couldn't get a thing for Christmas, but, you know, they always did their best. And, you know, when I think back to our childhood, I think travel was difficult. And so mom and dad always took a lot of care to make sure we traveled as a family and, you know, go on road trips. And I think I have a very fondness for road trips because of that. And that kind of stands out.
What is your earliest memory of mom getting sick?
Okay, so mom, at this point, our grandmother had already passed away. Mom had been to Hong Kong for about a year. Well, maybe you're talking about a year or so. 2 years trying to help our grandfather and her brothers and, you know, our uncles sort through like the business of living. Grandfather's business was a wreck because he was so devastated by the loss of
love
mom's
of his
mom,
life.
Right?
Yeah.
That he didn't know how to function, and so the business was falling apart. So mom had flown to Hong Kong and we hadn't seen her for quite some time. And then the year that she came back, I have a distinct memory watching television on her bed and just hanging out with mom, as I want to do. It's my favorite thing to do. Is sometimes I'll just, when mom's watching TV on inside her bedroom, I'll always crawl up and do that. And I remember her looking at me really panicked, and she said, "I have a lump." And I hadn't realized that she had been massaging, I think, a sore muscle in her pec, and then that's when she discovered she had a lump, and she just stopped and said, "I have a lump." And that, I don't have any memory kind of between that and the doctors. Like, I remember that distinct look of panic on her face when she discovered the lump. And that's that. Ever since then, I think my memories are kind of in like flipbook style, little pieces here and there, where I remember her surgeries. I remember her having to change rooms with her because they had a waterbed, as parents do in the 90s. They had waterbeds, which was terrible for surgery. And you never really have a clear idea of it until you go through. And you're like, holy shit, how did she do that? That's terrible. But yeah, so she had, we had to change rooms. And dad slept on the floor while mom slept on the bed. And I would catch them every morning. And dad would just be there watching over mom. And mom would be sleeping with like the little Jackson Pratt drains. Didn't know what they were at the time, just the hose that comes out.
I'm going to ask you then, take me through the day that you find out that you have cancer.
I'd say the journey started before then, right? So I think the day is not when I had cancer. The day was the day that the genetics results came back as being the likelihood possibility was high. That was probably the day of kind of awareness that there was a timeline, and the sudden realization that that I may not be immortal. I think the sudden realization that even in all my plans, I never really planned. So when I, you know, think back on my life before then, a lot of times I was fine with being caregiver, blah blah blah. But I never really considered, oh, what happens to our parents, for example, if I'm not around to look after them? That was something that just never occurred to me. It always was like, okay, yeah, no, when they're going, this is the plan, this is how we'll handle it. And I was like, holy cow, what if it's me? And I, you know, baked a whole bunch of plans around how I'd look after our parents, and yet I hadn't even considered that maybe I wouldn't have a choice in that matter.
So the genetic testing is the test that you take to determine whether or not you carry a specific gene that is known to cause.
So we had already been referred to them, so that's very specific. It's because of the incidence of cancer occurrence in our family, there was just so much history of it. It was enough to warrant the procedure at the time was to, you can go to the high-risk genetics clinic to get testing. And it was actually because Stephanie wanted to. I personally wasn't sure if I wanted to know the number. I was worried what it would do, how I would react to the number. I wasn't sure after so many years of looking after people whether that would be a thing that would weigh heavily on me or not. Like, I was still, you know, and to be perfectly honest, as a part of it, where I was so tired of being in the hospital, the last thing I wanted to do was go for more tests, only to find out something was wrong with me. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's reality is reality. But when Stephanie kind of hit the process, that was the thing we did.
And to take us back, you had been at the hospital because you were actually a primary caregiver for multiple people who were diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, and then including, like, seeing my best friend, seeing her through her final hospice care. That was after a chain of events, and it was, like, everything. It was, you know, my dog got cancer, you know, my best friend got cancer, so my two best friends had cancer within months of each other. And then, you know, prior to that, there was the ex-husband that had cancer and his mother that had cancer. It was just... I was tired. I was absolutely tired by the time it came to me. But it was a very defining moment, you know, and I don't regret not knowing. I think that was a lot of freeing things that came from it. So I think, you know, the discovery of, oh yeah, there's something. I actually felt like something was off anyway. And I wasn't sure about the timing, and Stephanie had just gotten through her diagnosis, and it was like, okay, well, something doesn't feel right. You know, I was on the pill, and yet the hormones were fluctuating, and I was getting a lot of, like, these, just things were changing, and my body didn't feel right. And so when it came out, it was like this pseudo kind of, you know, cry a little tear just from the sake of, oh yeah, fuck, this is reality. But then there's a lot of freeing that comes with it. So it wasn't this devastating news. If anything, it was a little bit of a relief of, okay, that's a thing I can deal with and move.
So what's the relief portion of that? What are you glad to know?
It caught so early, so super early. Like, I've been through this enough to know your odds are simply the earlier the prognosis, the earlier they catch it, the better off you are, right? Like, that changes a lot of things. If you ignore the problem or you take forever to go and get follow-ups and get treatment and blah, 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 it actually skews your averages of survival. And that's a really important thing to know, is the difference between that. I think, you know, the other part that came in is that it was known quantity stuff. I have a gene. It's the same kind of gene that determines whether my hair is going to be black or that my eyes are going to be brown. There's so much that comes with it that you don't have to worry about all the things I wish I had done. It's everybody's going to wish that anyway. You're always going to say, oh, I should have been a dead or blah, blah, blah. But there wasn't a thing where it's like, well, I should have eaten differently. A glass of red wine wasn't going to make the difference. It is still the preferred to do the best version of yourself. So that doesn't absolve you from, hey, I'm going to eat all these fries because it doesn't make the difference. The acceleration of it is absolutely, you know, something that's important. But, you know, mom was the same age as I was, the exact same, almost the same month. So I already knew the trajectory. So I already knew the odds were in my favor. So, you know, for knowing that and knowing how much data was available to me, I was able to track all the data that I had on even my treatment. The determination of doing chemo had a lot to do with, they sent the mass for testing and came out with odds of recurrence and whether or not a particular treatment was going to help. That's incredible to know percentages and data. Like, that's it was an ironic thing. The thing that I was most afraid of was data, and the thing that ended up being the most freeing was data. So there you go.
Go
and
figure,
a little bit,
right?
Of, like, womp womp, Cindy. Yeah.
What is the most important thing you've learned about yourself through this experience?
I would assume through any experience. Like, so I say the day of reckoning wasn't the day that I got cancer. It was the day that I suddenly realized that, that there was a percentage of chance that I would, that I had been spending most of my life doing what I call a deferred life. It's the maybe or someday or sometime. It's this idea that there is, at a time you're going to do a thing. And things that had never occurred to me was, you know, it's a, you know, the fear of doing a thing, a lot of it has a lot to do with the confidence, the fear of failure, the realization it's a really convenient excuse to blame a lot of pauses on life. There'll always be a reason not to do a thing. So, you know, when I suddenly realized, holy cow, you know, the chance of me dying was, you know, or not even dying, not that I thought I was going to get cancer and die right away, because I've seen 50-50 of success rates, right? Like, it, there's so many things that contribute to an outcome. So the reality was not whether I was going to die or not. The reality is, when I do die, would the thought be all the things that I wish I had done, right? So I always remembered, you know, my former mother-in-law, one of her, the conversations we had before she passed, had a lot to do with the fact she had been obsessed with, they always thought they had more time. They would do traveling once, you know, the ex-husband's dad retired, they would go traveling. And there was this whole deference of plans. And that was the immediate thing that shot through my brain. You know, even my best friend, you know, when she was passing, I remember the conversations where the family were always like, but she was excellent. She was really healthy. She was ate really well. And for me, there were all these things that kind of said as though they would change the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of any outcome is our end of our lives is the end of our lives. That is it. That is known quantity stuff. All of us will terminate. All of us have an ending. The question is when. We don't know when, right? So the assumption cannot be a thing I'm going to do is to prevent death. The idea should be the thing I'm doing now is so that when the time comes, it won't make a difference. The lists I will have of the things I want to do will be always very long because there will always be new things I wish I had more time for. So, you know, the sheer recognition of the three things that I would say is when I thought about it and I kind of said, okay, look, I will always wish there were more time. There was more time. Like, I would love to think that I came to a point where it's like, I live long enough, blah, blah, blah. The reality is that that might not be me. More often than not, I'm probably going to wish that I had more time. There's always going to be stuff that I wish I did on that list. As stuff crosses off, there'll always be a new thing, and I'm going to want to do that thing. So I might as well just remove those two regrets right out. The last thing was, if it all ends tomorrow, did I do everything that I wanted to do? If the answer is no, then the question needs to be, why not? Right? If there's a legitimate reason why I can't do a thing, that makes sense. But if the reason is because I'm afraid or I was waiting or blah, 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 if it was anything that smelled like an excuse to hold back of something because the answer to that question was, I am afraid. And unless I could admit to myself, I am afraid, fear will control my life and all the rest of my life becomes a convenient excuse not to do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I have not grown and then that will send up as a regret for myself. So I think that's I think the important part of any life is just to do a thing because you want to do it, but not because you're afraid to do it.
What was something that you maybe held back on doing and after this journey, now that you're sort of back to, I would say, energy levels, what's something that you hesitated on before that you moved forward?
I already did everything I wanted to do before that. So a lot of people wait till the thing happens.
Yeah.
I didn't. I actually spent 2 years before all of this, knowing that eventually this day might come. I spent 2 years actively going through my life and doing the things that freaked me out and feared me out and blah, 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 because I didn't want to wait till a moment happened before a thing happened.
Was that 2 years from the genetic testing, you test positive? Was that the 2 years? Like, what was that?
Yeah, so I think it trigger? Started with I think what it was there was a result that had come back with one of my mammograms that indicated a lump that would appear or disappear based on hormones. And that immediately got me thinking the question of, maybe I might get cancer after all. That kind of sucks, but that would be a reality. And it was the ex-husband's reaction to that that made me went, okay, I gotta really think about my life, right? Not that I begrudge him anything, but his panic was he didn't really think about me as a partner. He thought about himself, and that's, he couldn't get on board with the things that I felt we needed to do in case anything happened. Like, I needed to get better about my debt. I needed to get better about the way we were taking our habits and so forth and so on. Not because I thought it was going to work back a thing, but I don't think I could go through life without knowing I gave it a good shot.
Right.
Right. So, but he was not very partner focused. And then when I got the confirmation, I realized that, you know what? I don't know how many more signs I need at this point to just do the thing. I would rather go it alone than be stuck, because I already know what that path looks like. And if I'm, you know, not looking after myself, how can I look after anybody else, right? And all I would do was learn to resent them. So I spent about a good year, kind of what I said, just the year of attacking my fears. I literally started doing things that were on my list that I was waiting for a person to do. I had a giant post-it note, and I wrote the words, "What do you want?" on there. And I just wrote all over it. Took markers and just put a whole bunch of things I thought I wanted to do, blah, blah, blah. And then tried to figure out what are the things that I wanted to do, and did one step in either direction of a category that I thought. And it was quite shocking for me after 6 months, going, holy cow, you know, in life we do a lot of things. We don't register that we're doing a thing towards a goal, but we actually do. And it's this idea that you have to have it in a certain way, otherwise you don't actually perceive it. Like, that's it's a fascinating thing. So, you know, proceeded that year to do a whole bunch of things that scared me, and then had what I call the ret year, which is the year you suddenly realize, how come I'm not good? Because right? You can almost excuse that you suck at something, and then you're like, why am I still sucking at this thing? So it becomes a very, a lesson in humility and growth, and that growth takes time and commitment, and it was really a difficult year to plog through. And so by the time the cancer had come around, I already hit like 3 years of just active program of just constantly engaging with thought, you know, doing the mindfulness, working out really hard, getting used to being sucky at things, because I thought it was so important. When was the last time I was a beginner at something? So it was like, you know what, I'm okay with sucking. And that was really, I just needed to suck less. That was literally all I had in my mind, was all I need to do is not be sad that I suck. Just recognize, okay, I'm not good at this. And all I need to do is move the needle, regardless of how big that need. Doesn't have to be a big jump. Small jump is fine. So by the time the cancer kind of came out, I had already, because of the genetic test, I already spoke to all the doctors. I made sure, like, when they said, hey, do you want to talk to them? I said, yeah, let me talk to everybody now while I'm cool-headed, and I can get a plan for myself, and I can deal with all the issues that will come up with it. So I had a lot of productive conversations. I had lots of time to think through what things would look like and how things are managed. And, like, there was all of this time that when it came down to the declaration, it was literally just executing a plan. I was fully prepared. As prepared as one could be, right? Didn't know how the chemo was going to go, didn't know this, but had lots of data, asked lots of questions, knew a bunch of things before going in, and so therefore, I was going to be as calm as I could, and I could accept exactly where I was at, and that made a big difference.
It's funny, because I remember at one point, early on, but it was before the diagnosis, you all of a sudden, you were big into caving.
Yeah.
And I was kind of mind-blown, because I had, like, in the whole time that, well, you're my sister, so the whole time we've grown up together, I never even thought that was something that you were interested in.
Well, and it came down to, literally, it was, I asked the question of, do I know anything about it? No. All right. Let's try it, and then I'll see if I don't like it, right? Like, that's really what it was. It's like, I'll give it a shot. Why not?
Yeah.
And so I found the UFC University had an active living program, which allows you just to sign up and try a bunch of random things. So I went, like, paragliding through it. Parasailing through it. I've done, like, climbing through them and stuff like that. And so it literally was I got tired of waiting for people to do stuff. I got tired of trying to find somebody to do a thing with. So I kind of said, look, I've spent my whole life deferring at this point. So I knew for a fact if I signed up with these programs, I'd be going alone, but I'd be with a group of strangers trying to do the same thing. So at least we'd have that in common, and that was good enough for me.
I'm going to ask you, knowing everything you know now, if you could give one piece of advice to your younger self, what would it be?
To my younger self. Don't wait so long to get healthy. I think most people wait until after a thing before they get healthy. When I look back at how quickly I responded out of things. Like, I was able to, I had very few issues with the whole thing. I think my biggest part right now is the hormone suppressant makes life a little bit less pleasant for me. But, you know, in terms of receiving chemo and being able to withstand chemo, and it came down to eating well and drinking plenty of water and getting exercise, it is not to deal with the outcome of whether you'll get sick or not. It's to deal with the fact of when you get sick, it will make a difference. It will absolutely make a difference to even just to walk every day, even throughout it. It helps so much more than anyone can possibly explain. Like, you know, they do a good job in guiding you that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, getting healthy has, everyone waits till afterwards and try to do rehabilitation. It's really hard to get up to that space of being healthy. If you're already starting on that path, and it doesn't have to be crazy, but if you're in good shape and you're taking care of yourself and you're doing all the things you know you're supposed to do, everyone spends time rationalizing it, but like eating well, doing, as you know, whatever exercise suits you, whatever, even just walking makes a huge difference, so that when something comes, like I went from running, I ran my first two cycles of chemo, and then after that I had to stop running because I couldn't, my bones couldn't take it, my hands couldn't take it, and I was having the effects. So then I had to just modify, and just each time just modify less and less and less. But I was still able to keep relatively active, and it made a huge difference in how I progressed on that. And so I think, you know, when we think about getting healthy, think about it with not for the traditional sense of I'm going to get fit or prolong myself from getting disease. It is when a thing happens, you'll have an excellent base, and that will make the difference about how well you endure through a thing.
Well, Sin, I want to say thank you for sharing such a very intimate, vulnerable story. I think it takes a lot of courage to say some of the honest things that you have been saying. One thing I do usually like to do is if listeners want to get in touch or support some of the causes that you support, because you've been so kind with and gracious with your story, how can someone do that for you?
Well, I think there's a few different ways. So first one is if they needed to get in touch because they want to talk and, you know, happy to do that, they can totally go through you.
Perfect.
And then...
So DM me on my Insta. Yeah. Okay.
And then I think if you're thinking about organizations to support, there are two organizations that made a huge difference for me. One is the Bow Valley SPCA. They are a no cage, no kill shelter out of the Bow Valley Kenmore area. Because of them, I've been able to work with a lot of the dogs. And through this, I mean, that's part of the therapy, was actually got plenty of puppy therapy. Like I was, you know, when I was waiting for results from my biopsy, because I wasn't sure, and I didn't tell my family at this time because I didn't want anyone to worry, because I didn't know, like, you know, what would be the point of worrying them if I didn't have an outcome, was I was actually so busy looking after this mama dog we had received with 11 puppies. So busy looking after doing puppy duty that I couldn't even be concerned about myself, because I was keeping warm little bodies alive, and that was super exciting for me. So, you know, definitely the dog walking therapy made a huge difference. And actually it was great because a couple times we had a couple dogs that, you know, when I was going through surgery, they had also come at surgery. So we were paired together so we could walk slowly together. We would be each other's pace. So that was so lovely. It made a huge difference. And they're a lovely organization, and they are, you know, they keep a very minimal staff. And so it's a lot of volunteer based. So I love to get them support. The other one that, which is really key, is the Breast Cancer Supportive Care Foundation. They are 100% donation funded. They're the difference. They're the reason why I was able to get a lot of monitoring done. And actually, because of them, is the reason why the cancer got diagnosed so early. I had an MRI that they had arranged and scheduled. And so I've been using them a lot for the pre-care. Our sister, obviously, uses them a lot for our post-care. And so I think it's definitely made a huge difference in being informed, and they're a great organization.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you again, Sin. I really appreciate you talking to all of us today.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.